Well, here it is, July. And just like always, people will come to Uprising this month expecting to worship God in a way that offers renewal, rest, joy, forgiveness, and meaning to their lives. People will come to church on Sunday mornings expecting that God will meet them here. God will. And even though most of us would say that that's enough, the truth is most of us want more. We want God to meet us here in the sanctuary or where we are worshiping in the manner in which we're most comfortable or in the manner we find most appealing. Some of us want God to meet us in jeans and t-shirt, smelling like grandma's kitchen, gathering us up in loving arms and assuring us everything's going to be all right. Some of us prefer that our worship service be like an audience with royalty. We like to see our God as Christ the victor, wearing robes and a crown and ushering God's dominion. Some of us wouldn't recognize God in any of these forms, but find God in the glow of a candle's flame or in silence. During this month of July, just as we always do, we're inviting God to be glorified in scripture, sermon, sacrament, song, and more song. Specifically, the songs of the musical stage of Broadway. This can be a challenge to people who feel a bit uncomfortable about the faithfulness of creating worship services around themes suggested by musical theater. To you, I want to say, bear with us. Give it a chance. Allow yourself an opportunity to encounter God in the here and now. For when we seek, we find. And when we open ourselves up to experiencing the divine in more ways, we will have that experience. There is something holy in Maya Angelou's witness to the resurrection in Still I Rise. For some people, the story of creation in Genesis comes alive not through the reading, but through the power and the mystery of God's creation passed from God's hand to Adam's on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. So there's no reason to be surprised when we find lessons, biblical lessons, Christian life lessons, from the sometimes fantastical plots of Broadway. Today, the curtain goes up on something rotten. And instead of deciding on a theme this year, as I told you, and then going to look for musicals that match the theme, we chose four musicals and decided to let them speak for themselves. Here's what I think Something Rotten would like to say to us today. The musical opens with the minstrel welcoming the audience to the English Renaissance. We're introduced to two brothers, Nick and Nigel Bottom, who run a theater troupe and are rehearsing for their upcoming play, Richard II. They don't have high hopes for their play because across town, Will Shakespeare is opening a little thing called Romeo and Juliet. However, their tiny hopes are dashed when a patron rushes in to tell them that Will Shakespeare is nixing Romeo and Juliet, and instead is going to open Richard II as well. Now, because Shakespeare has already done Richard III, Nick is outraged. He thinks that Shakespeare's decision to go backwards from Richard III to Richard II is a direct affront. Matters go from bad to worse when the patron who delivered the news about Shakespeare's change of plans announces that he will no longer support the Bottom Brothers' production of Richard II and expects to see a new play by morning. Nick's rage erupts into the song, God, I Hate Shakespeare.
God, I hate Shakespeare. That's right, I said it. I do, I hate Shakespeare. I just don't get it how a mediocre actor from a measly little town is suddenly the brightest jewel in England's royal crown. Oh, God, I hate Shakespeare. His plays are wordy, but oh no, the great Shakespeare. That little nerd, he has no sense about the audience. He makes them feel so dumb. He really doesn't care that my poor butt is getting numb. Oh.
How can you say that?
It's easy, I can say it, cause it's absolutely true.
Don't be a penis, the man is a genius.
The genius is he's fooling all of you.
But he's brilliant, what majesty flows from his pen. His poetry soars like a sweet violin. God's own inspiration, like lightning doth strike him, and he captures my soul.
Oh God, you sound just like him.
Really? Thanks.
You should hate Shakespeare.
Well, I don't. I try to emulate Shakespeare.
Well, there's your problem. You're so blinded by the bard who's such a pompous little man.
Why is it a problem to admit that I'm a fan?
Because he's a knack for a knack who's stealing everything he can.
How can you say that? How can you say that the man really knows how to write a wicked play? You wish you could pen one. We wish we were in one.
I just wish that he would go away.
Well, that's not gonna happen because everyone I know says that he's the greatest writer England's ever known.
And that's another thing I hate about Shakespeare is all the twits who bloviate about Shakespeare and how they prattle on about his great accomplishments, well, la-di-da-di-da. And once they start their gushing, there's no stopping them, and then it's blah, 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 Shakespeare. And he walks in, it's dum-da-dum-dum, Shakespeare. And he's holding court, and they're all, Will, you're such a genius, and your writing is divine. A rose by any other name is such a clever line. And they're all, ooh, and I'm all, stop. And he's all, ooh, and I'm all, ugh. And I'm really getting sick of it. Oh, God, I hate Shakespeare.
I think we sort of know you hate Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. The way he feigns humility, and all he does is gloat. The way he wears that silly frilly thing around his throat. The poster child for why no one should ever procreate. Let me make a shorter list for you, and I'll give it to you straight. Every little thing about Shakespeare is what I hate.
He hates, he clearly, surely, really, truly hates Shakespeare. Don't hate.
Nigel and Nick go home to their small house and are greeted by Nick's wife, Bea. When she hears that their plans for a better life have had another wrench thrown into them, she tries to get Nick to accept her help providing for the family. She lets him know that she is an equal partner to him and that their family would benefit greatly if she could step out of the roles assigned to women of the period. She sings, I'm more than a woman, baby. Let me be your right-hand man.
But they're not.
They kind of are.
No, things are fine.
But if they weren't,
but it's okay.
Love.
What?
Ugh,
what?
Quit trying to protect me. There's no problem that's too big. When you're married, that's the gig. So don't be a sexist pig. Is it asking too much of you? It's only because I love you. In fact, I'll show you that I'm right.
Don't forget, I'm not a shrinking violet, a solid rock am I, so don't be thinking I'll crumble when you know what hits the fan. And here's how the Bible on Broadway works. This silly song, these exaggerated lyrics, could they possibly hold some truth? Of course they could, if we'll let them. I'm not talking about proof texting or forcing the musical to tell us what we already want to believe. I'm talking about dealing with exactly what is there and seeing if there might be a message for us. A call to kindness, to compassion, to creativity, to courage, or any other number of aspirations. I know Bee's song is a little silly, but oh my. If you think about it, the song is written to an audience in the year 1599. Over 400 years, and it's still relevant. You might expect me to use this song to segue into a commentary on the death of Roe v. Wade, but I won't. I've talked about it for weeks now, and not one mind have I changed. Perhaps what needs to be changed is my approach. I know I'm preaching to the choir here today, and that's not going to help much, but perhaps I'll provide you with some new information that you might take into your own conversations. Here's what I've come to accept. For a person who believes that Roe v. Wade is simply about murdering a baby, my facts about viability and a woman's agency won't go far. For someone convinced about heartbeats and feelings of pain, I'm not changing their mind. Perhaps I shouldn't be trying to change those minds. Perhaps I shouldn't be entering the embryo argument at all. But I'm wondering if I might get traction if I simply talk about human autonomy. The right to make decisions about myself. The most basic of all rights. Instead of jumping into the debate with Roe v. Wade, what if I take another approach? What if I talk not about my right to end a pregnancy, but about my right to do anything? Do you know about the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment? That's over and done, right? Let me give you a little history. As written, the proposed Equal Rights Amendment is a pretty simple idea. Alice Paul, an American Quaker suffragist, introduced the text in 1923. Quote, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." She wrote that text in 1923. She rewrote it in 1943, but the language remains almost exactly the same today. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. You would expect that's the law of the land today, but it's not that simple. In March of 1972, over 50 years ago, the United States Senate passed the Equal Rights Amendment, following the lead of the House of Representatives and paving the way for it to become the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Yet the ERA was never added to the Constitution, Because 3/4 of the state had to ratify the proposed amendment by 1979 for it to take effect. Later, Congress extended the deadline to 1982, but even by 1982, 38 or 3/4 of the states had not voted in favor of the ERA. In 2020, Virginia became the final state needed to ratify the ERA. In 2020. But it was almost 40 years too late. There are people suing to push the ERA through, and some are pushing to have it blocked. 5 states in the course of the last 40 years have tried to rescind their ratification of the ERA. The Trump Justice Department advised that because the deadline had passed, Congress needed to go back to the drawing board on the ERA. Back to the drawing board on something as simple as equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state. Last year, the House passed a joint resolution to remove the deadline altogether so that the 28th Amendment can be enacted, which President Joe Biden says he supports. But it's not done. How does the fact that we still haven't enacted it play out? Well, here's a current example. Some doctors still demand that a woman has her husband's permission for a tubal ligation. In layman's terms, to have her tubes tied. The following tweet went viral recently. My OBGYN just said, if I want my tubes tied electively, then my husband's signature is also required on the release form. A 34-year-old woman wrote that. I asked my OBGYN, she says, if that was a law, and my doctor said no, but it's my policy. Her tweet sparked outrage, and soon OBGYN horror stories were trending on Twitter. Across the country, grown women were being denied that control of their own bodies. Here's one that our community should pay attention to. Quote, my OBGYN denied me a hysterectomy for my endometriosis on the basis I may want children with a man in the future. My wife was in the chair next to me. A word to the men among us, and I know you largely understand, but let me say it anyway. For those of you who think this is a woman's issue and you don't need to get involved because you have bodily autonomy, I have 3 words. Lawrence versus Texas. Lila Watson is a Murray Indigenous Australian visual artist, activist, and academic who works in the fields of women's issues and Aboriginal issues. Here's what she says about our being together. If you have come here to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. That's how this works. So let's get back to the musical. Nick decides the way to beat Shakespeare at his own game is to go to a soothsayer to see if he can find inspiration for a new play. He finds a soothsayer named Thomas Nostradamus. who is the nephew of the famous soothsayer Nostradamus. Nick asks him what the next big thing in theater will be, because he wants to get a jump on this Shakespeare guy. Nick asks what the next big thing in theater will be, and Nostradamus says that it will be a musical, a play where an actor is saying his lines and out of nowhere he just starts singing. Nick thinks it's ridiculous, but he quickly warms up to the idea. Afterwards, Nick discovers that Shakespeare is stealing ideas from Nick's brother Nigel. Nick flies into another rage and returns to the soothsayer, this time not to find out what the next big thing is, but to have Thomas Nostradamus tell him what Shakespeare's next big play will be so that Nick can write it as a musical first. Nostradamus sees a vision. If you're in the audience, you can see the vision becoming clearer, in and out of focus. It's the name Hamlet. But Nostradamus misinterprets it as omelet. He makes a few other mistakes, such as the prince eating a Danish pastry rather than being a Danish prince. But Nick puts his faith in the soothsayer. And wouldn't this be a good time to say something about putting your faith in God rather than a soothsayer? But that seems too obvious. Now, I want you to know that you can trust me. So the next song in the musical is Omelet. It's a song about eggs. And I'm not going to try to do anything with that. I really want you to trust me, and there's nothing profoundly spiritual in that song. So I'm going to end this with another brief history lesson. The ancient Greek and Roman civilizations were remarkably advanced for their time. Both civilizations made a number of contributions to human progress in the areas of science and government, philosophy, architecture. Some scholars perceive Europe as having been plunged into darkness when the Roman Empire fell in around 500 AD. Those Middle Ages are often said to be dark because of a lack of scientific and cultural advancement. But they were dark for a whole lot of other reasons. During that time, feudalism was the dominant political system. The feudal system of labor hindered upward social mobility, which basically meant that poor people had very little opportunity to improve their condition. Religious superstition was widespread during this time. The Catholic Church was extremely institutionalized and often opposed the scientific and cultural advancements of the time. Famine and disease were common. The Black Death, the bubonic plague, devastated Europe in the late 1340s and early 1350s, killing an estimated 100 to 200 million people. The Western European Christians launched conflicts for religious territory. These crusades were military campaigns sanctioned by the Roman Catholic Church. In 1095, Pope Urban II proclaimed the first crusade with the stated goal of restoring Christian access to the holy places in and near Jerusalem. In all, there were anywhere from 5 to 9 crusades, depending on which sources you cite. I'm talking about holy wars in which 1 to 2 million were murdered in the name of God. And the world came out of it into the Renaissance. I know for many of us this feels like a hopeless time, but I want to offer hope. Not simple, naive hope. Not Pollyanna hope, but hope. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these. Share these things. Retweet these things. Comment on these things. Think on these things. We have come out of the dark ages before. We cannot change history, but we can begin today to write the future.
Look, it's Francis Bacon with a chicken.
What's he making?
Well, I think he's found a new way of freezing meat.
That's new.
Look, it's Walter Raleigh found a new world, by golly.
And he's brought us all tobacco, a treat.
Also new. Hey, look, we have a list of writers who are also writing something new. It's true, he do. Like who? Like who? Like Decker.
Woo!
John Webster.
Woo!
Ben Jonson.
Uh-huh.
And Chris. Hello, Thomas Kidd, Thomas Middleton, Thomas Moore, and our brightest star.
He's
the bomb, the soul of the age, the whiz of the Elizabethan age. He's incredible, unforgettable. He's just so freaking awesome. Shakespeare, Shakespeare. His writing's first rate. His acting's incredible. Isn't he great? Isn't he great? Love him. Welcome to the Renaissance. To a 16th century experience. In the age that's golden, the olden days are over. We bid them adieu. Renaissance. Everything is new. 'Cause Renaissance means rebirth.